This
20th.
Conference will now be recorded.
We are now recording. I'd like to just go around and confirm who is here. Myself, Chair Andrew Plowman, Fernando Alvarado.
Here.
Once a month.
Audrey
once
Nelson.
Here.
Given that we have COVID.
Julie Osmus.
That it's easier
here
to work, do all this kind of stuff.
We have our Park and Rec Director, Rob Baumgarn.
Here.
We have our Public Works Director, Mr. Christensen.
Here.
We have our Police Chief, Jim Felt.
Also here.
And we have our Engineering Admin Assistant, Ms. Del Bosque.
Here.
And then I have invited for a special item tonight, Ms. Hawarda to join us. And if nobody else objects, I would like to move this item to number one for our topics of conversation so that she can be part of the conversation and then she can go about her business for the evening while we take care of the rest of our business. Any objections to that? Seeing and hearing none, let's go ahead and let's take that as our first item. I'm going to call first on our police chief, and I will also welcome Ms. Hawarda. Thank you for being with us
Thank
tonight.
You.
I had received an email regarding this incident from our police chief, kind of outlining just a little bit of it, but I think it'd be good for everybody to hear it. And then also, like I mentioned, I invited Ms. Hawarda to join us this evening for some comment. But if I could go to Chief Felt to kind of just give us a brief synopsis, and then we'll take some comment from Ms. Hawarda, and then we'll proceed from there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of a brief synopsis of it's regarding a dangerous dog designation for a dog residing in the city of Wilmer over on Hillcrest Drive. A little bit of background is in July of 2017 is when the first formal complaints about this dog started coming in. It's a female German Shepherd that's spayed female named Lady that lives over in that area. Was first issued a citation for a dog at large complaint in July of 2017. Things have escalated with that dog. One of the more biggest complaints started back in April of 2018 when a neighbor's dog was injured. The lady, the German Shepherd, was able to bite this dog through some orange snow fencing that was in the backyard of that residence. Through that, the dog was deemed a potentially dangerous dog per the city ordinance. Which required before the dog to be released from impound at that time that it had to have proof of rabies vaccination, current dog license, had to be microchipped, had to have a proper enclosure, and that proper enclosure dedication also includes that anybody walking the dog, it has to be on a leash and the person has to be over 18 in charge of the dog at that time. The owners at that time complied with all the requirements under the potentially dangerous dog portion of the ordinance. And the dog was released to them. Unfortunately, on the 16th, we had another complaint, and I feel badly for the Hawardas. Their dog was attacked by the same dog, Lady the German Shepherd, and their dog did not survive that attack. With that, the dog, Lady the German Shepherd, was impounded again and is currently at the animal shelter. Our animal control officer has gone through the statute and the dog does fit the designation to be deemed a dangerous dog right now, which in order for it to be released would require not only the initial things like a rabies vaccination, microchip, proper enclosure, dog license, but also that the owner has to have liability insurance of at least $300,000 on the dog. Has to display a dangerous animal sign and tag, which are made by the state and have to be purchased. That's about $30. There's a City of Wilmer dangerous animal license. That's an additional $30. And then the owner was notified that there would also be the requirement of the dog having to be muzzled while in public, on a harness and not just a collar, and required obedience training there. As part of the dangerous dog designation, the owner has the right to contest that and has, excuse me, has turned in a letter that she wishes to contest that. So that would be some paperwork that would be forthcoming for the June 3rd Public Works, Public Safety meeting for your consideration. But at this time, the dog is impounded, will not be released until the matters are settled. And then June 3rd would be the next time it would reach this committee.
Okay, thank you, Chief. I see that you want to make comment. Do you want to make your comment now, or would you like to hear from Ms. Helwarda first?
Well, anybody that can explain on this last incident, did the German Shepherd get out of its confines? Was it with somebody out of under the age of 18 and got away on a leash? Or how was it that Helwarda's dog had contact with it?
Go ahead, Chief.
Yep. All right, I apologize. I did not cover that, but the Helwarda's dog was on Helwarda's property. The dog was being walked by an approximately 9-year-old girl who lives in the family that owns the dog. So they were not in compliance with the potentially dangerous dog requirements. We've also taken other reports from neighbors, you know, that now with this continued problem have said that the dog runs at large on a regular basis. Our officer did see the dog running at large while they were taking the report about Helwarda's dog being attacked. So continued issues there, but the dog slipped out of its collar as it was being walked by this 9-year-old, but that is obviously not in compliance with the potentially dangerous dog ordinance. And as is everybody's concern, not only for pets and everything else, but just for children in the area for injury is a big concern.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chief. I think now would be a good time to hear from Ms. Helwarda. Ms. Helwarda, first of all, I feel badly hearing about your pet. I know that people's pets become family members. And so we're really sorry to hear about that in this incident. With that said, the floor is yours for a comment okay. that you wish.
Officer felt really covered everything really well. I guess there's one thing I'd like to add is that after I got the dog away from my dog, that dog went at large in my, actually this was at my daughter's house, not at my property. I was visiting my daughter and my grandkids. My daughter had to lift up, her dog was tied up, has a Chihuahua as well, not a Chihuahua, a Dachshund, and her 1-year-old in her arms, and that dog was growling at my daughter. And she was really scared too. And like you also said, Officer Felt, that dog runs the neighborhood constantly. It's constantly running around. So that is very concerning. And another thing that concerned me, and this neighbor actually called and reported this, that this owner of this dog was contacting the neighbor, the one that was bit in 2017, asking her to call the police department and say she made a false report so that her dog wouldn't, and she did call that in as well, because I did call Officer Mike, I think it's Mike Yonke, and he said he did receive a report from that neighbor. And another neighbor called in yesterday, I believe, because her grandson has a scar on his back from a couple years ago, and she also called into the police station stating, just a reminder that, you know, he did hurt my grandson as well, who lives in that neighborhood. So I just don't think they're taking it very seriously on keeping that dog away. They're not, the dog just shook his head out of the collar. He wanted my dog. So, I mean, it was an attack from the get-go, and it was hard. I'm glad my 9-year-old granddaughter was with her dad, because she was devastated, of course, and that was her buddy the dog's been with us since she was born, and he came to us as a beaten dog and we saved it, and just sad that he had to die that way. And so his guts were literally just hanging out of his stomach. So, I mean, it was just an attack.
Okay. Yeah, that's a difficult thing to hear. But as difficult as it is to hear, I guess it is our job and responsibility as councilors and city leaders and public safety officials to address the situation. Chief Felt, I assume that it's going, because you said it's going to be coming back, I assume that all the information will be compiled regarding the various police reports and any calls or information that's been sent into your office. I imagine that information will be compiled for the meeting that will pertain to this.
Yes, that's correct. The request for a hearing just arrived at our office this afternoon by the dog's owner, but I've got most of that compiled right now and we'll get it all together. And like Mrs. Huerta said, there have been some additional reports that have been made since then. And also that report about the dog owner contacting from the dog attack back in 2018. So that's all been documented too.
Okay. Well, Ms. Huerta, I want you to know, and then we're going to turn it over to the committee for discussion, but I'd like to gauge just from you. I hope that you are of the feeling that our local public safety officers have done their job in this case to the best of their ability, and that
100 stars for what you guys have done. I mean, the officers calling me almost daily. I didn't think it would be taken seriously, but I didn't realize people really just love their dogs and it's not okay. And so this might sound weird, but maybe Lo died to help save some kids in the neighborhood and another little dog. So
I don't think that's
far. A little sappy, but it's kind of how I'm feeling.
It's a genuine concern if you have any kind of animal that is aggressive enough to kill another animal. I mean, I know that cats chase mice and stuff like that, but this is a different type of deal. So it's important that we take it seriously. Committee, your questions and comments. Go ahead, Fernando.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be interested to know what insurance company is going to insure that dog. I know it's one thing to say you have it, but I would want to see proof. If my insurance company knew of a dog like that, they would be dropped. I would want to see definite proof, especially when we hear about injured children. That's unapprehensible. We shouldn't have that, and I think we have to think long and hard how we're going to deal with this. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Fernando. Go ahead, Ms. Osmus.
Okay, maybe we will cover this in 2 weeks or whenever we get the rest of the information. But Jim, what's the threshold to have this dog put down?
No, good question. I think the threshold before is that if the owner does not comply with all the requirements here, then the Hawk Creek animal shelter would I guess you could call them experts, would consult on whether the dog could be rehabilitated and placed elsewhere. But my assumption would be that if the owners can't meet all these requirements, odds are that they would say that the dog should be euthanized.
Does that answer your question, Julie? Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, well, I will just say, again, I understand that you're with us here, Ms. Huerta, tonight, but I hope you understand that this, to compile the necessary paperwork and whatnot, we'll have to wait until the next meeting. And it's not as though we don't find it important or urgent or anything of that matter. We just want to be very thorough. And ready to take appropriate action when that time comes. And in the meantime, the dog will remain at Hawk Creek, I assume, Chief Felt?
Correct. Until this is all resolved, the dog will remain at the animal shelter.
Okay. So if the dog is there, then nobody is currently in danger, aside from the Hawk Creek people. And I suspect that they know how to handle these animals, unfortunately, but we will take this issue up again as part of our regularly scheduled meeting. We will overview all of the records and everything that Chief Felt has for us, and then we will make a determination as far as what our abilities are. I know we handled this an item similar to this either a year or two back, and it wasn't fun, but it was necessary. So it kind of is, it is what it is. But I would also, I would invite you to take part in that meeting if you wish, Ms. Hilwarda.
Yes.
Okay, and that will be a part of the regular schedule, and I assume it will be a part of that agenda that will be downloadable via the city's website.
Thank you for your time tonight. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Again, we extend our sympathies for your dog, and we're going to do our best to ensure that something like this or worse does not happen in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
All right. The next item that I have, well, first of all, I should ask our Public Works Director, would you like to go ahead with the agenda as it is in order, or is there anything that needs to be switched around?
I think in order is fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, Chief Felt, if there are no other items for the evening, if we're not taking a public safety update, what are we or are we not? Okay, if we're not,
no, then you, nothing tonight.
Then you may go ahead and also go about your business. It's a nice evening outside, partly cloudy and maybe 13 mile an hour wind. So enjoy.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Yes, you as well. Okay, next item we have on the agenda, project number 2001-E, 7th Avenue Sanitary Sewer Project Award. Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In front of you, while the numbers may not mean anything, this project is the sanitary sewer for the unique construction buildings, of which one is nearing completion. They would like to do a move in. This is the apartments there on North County Road 5, across from the college area there. They would like to have move in about 1st of August, and so they're nearing completion on that building. And they, I just talked to one of the owners this week, and he said that they've already got about 50% occupancy without even any tours of the building. And so they're looking pretty good to fill that building quickly. And I think they've got some preliminary plans for the second building. All that to say, this particular project or approval request from the committee is to do the sanitary sewer that will be sufficient for all four buildings. And then we've also required out of this particular design to extend the sanitary sewer to the north edge of their property, for which it could be tied onto at a later date, and just so it will be a public sewer. That's in some of the details. Of course, 288-unit apartment complex, that would be all four buildings, and this sanitary sewer would run out the west side of those buildings and then run south down to 7th Avenue, across 7th Avenue, and then tie into an existing sanitary sewer there in that development that Andrew was quite familiar with. The city is bidding the project as required so that it can be built to our standards, and it will be a public sewer at that point. So the recommended action, of course, is to approve, award the project to Land Pride Construction in the amount of $244,577 and authorize signatures on the agreement.
Would the committee like to move on this or take any action?
I would make a motion to approve the item that the engineer suggested as is.
Osmus, I'll second it.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second awarding project number 2001-E, the 7th Avenue Northwest Sanitary Sewer Construction. Award that to Land Pride Construction in the amount of $244,577, authorizing signatures on the agreement. Questions or comments? Well, then I'll go ahead. Because I drive past the project site every single day. It is amazing when you have a well thought out and well oiled construction mechanism working, because they have done some amazing things even through the cold winter, seeing their team out there doing what they did during that cold wind and weather. They were moving quickly and moving well. Sean, how about downstream from this? Not just because it's, you know, connected literally to my house, but, you know, for the good of everyone. Downstream, do we have the capacity for this?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. In fact, this is, as you are, your development is at the head end of the western trunk line for the sanitary sewer. And so there's plenty of capacity, plenty of depth. Everything is all of that was vetted out, of course, before the first building even got started. And so we knew how many units, and they were proposing how many units. But that does bring up a good point, in that their original plan was they wanted to tie this sewer to, or go across County Road 5, and which ties into a different lift station, in which we do not have the capacity, and that lift station has the issue, or has had issues of historically. So that's why the sewer is where it is, and is not as convenient as far as location on a map, but it's a better location to handle this amount of sewer. And this line could actually be construed a little bit as an extension of that western interceptor. And so it will have plenty of capacity for the foreseeable future.
And then another follow-up, thank you. You know, that piece of property, there's clean digging there to the south and southwest, should be clean digging because it's city park, but it's unobstructed city park, I believe. How far into 7th Ave do they need to get?
So that, quite frankly, is the biggest issue with this particular project, is crossing 7th Avenue. Problem is, with 7th Avenue being the only ingress and egress from that development back there, you cannot have it completely closed. EMS would have a heyday with it if you had any problems while that trench is across the entire street. You'd probably never hear the end of it. And so that was the biggest issue we had. They are required to trench under 7th Avenue. And so there's going to be very little. They'll have to dig on both sides, obviously, to get that boring. And so there's always going to be at least one lane of traffic open on 7th Avenue. And so that caused us some heartburn, you know, when it comes to this project. But to answer your second part of the question, that, believe it or not, that head end, or the head end manhole is around the corner from 7th Avenue. Does it turn into 28th, 32nd, whatever it turns into there, when it makes that corner, we have to go all the way to that intersection of that empty right of way, if you will. So it's unfortunate that we have to go that far, but that's the closest manhole we had.
Well, fortunate or maybe unfortunate, I don't know how they're going to do it, but just as a little note, the street there is pretty busted up as it is. So, you know, if it required some repair, I guess, you know, I'd look the other way on that one. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing and hearing none, a motion has been made and seconded to award this project to Land Pride Construction in the amount of $244,577. It's project number 2001-E. And let's go ahead and let's vote. Councilman Alvarado?
Aye.
Councilwoman Nelson?
Aye.
Councilwoman Osmus?
Aye.
And Councilman Plowman votes aye as well. That's 4 ayes, 0 nays. So that motion passes. Next item that we are going to discuss is the Rack 8 heating source. Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I know what you're thinking. Didn't we just look at this 2 weeks ago? The answer is yes. However, there was a question posed at the council meeting that I did not have the answer to. And in acquiring that answer, it may change your minds. It may not. And if not, then we just move on. But if it does, we feel better by having all of this information in front of you, of which we did not the first time. So that being said, the first maybe half of this CAR form is the same as what you had seen. The estimates for the cost of the electric baseboard conversion is $10,000. The estimate for the gas boiler conversion is $23,000. We did add a little bit of blurb in the details there that after checking on some of these answers, we found this to be about a 4-year payback. And then apparently a rule of thumb is that if it's under 7, that it's a good decision. And so it is under 7, but it's still a decision that needs to be made by the council since it is over our budgeted amount for that in that line item budget. So if you're going to stay there longer or selling point in the future, that's kind of where that rule of thumb comes into play. A couple more details on how we got to that 4-year break even. We obviously had to make some assumptions to get to that point. So the assumptions are based on the following. We assumed the gas and electric rates will stay the same for the next 4 years, and that's just to get us a base point. The $5,000 per year heating cost, if we used a 3-year average from 18 to 20, a $2,000 per year heating cost. That was first one. The $5,000 per year was an electric heat. We assumed a $2,000 per year heating cost using that same 3-year average if we've used gas heat. And it's further assumed that we used a similar efficiency or a similar amount of gas, giving us a $3,000 additional utility cost per year for electric. And this, again, this is for an average of the last 3 years. So a $13,000 difference in the installation quotes gives us, again, that roughly 4-year payback period. We are, as I've mentioned, prepared to solicit for the quotes as directed by council for the electric heat system. And we can sure do that in short order. But wanted to present this additional information to the council for the gas system. Again, RAC 8 has $12,000 in the operating budget for the conversion. So if the gas system is recommended, we would have, again, based on estimates, approximately $23,000 in unspent funds from the city hall conversion to use and transfer over to that budget. So the money is there, if not in the exact line item currently.
Okay, that's a lot to digest, but according to my math, it kind of makes sense. So we just need to determine what we think is going to be number one, the best for resale, and number two, the best for long-term usage, potentially if we happen to stay there. And I think that we've just as of late, the idea of how far out we are on the community center and city hall, that deliberation process is ongoing and is probably going to be ongoing. But I do appreciate the extra information. Does anybody wish to make a move on this one for further discussion? And then we can vote either way. Well, everybody's scared. You don't have to vote for it just to make the motion.
You're right. Okay. What we're looking at, make a motion to go with the electric?
Either or, a motion to go with the electric or a motion to change our mind and go with the gas, and then we can discuss it and vote yay or nay. If we vote nay, then by default or de facto, I think we stay where we're at. I see Mr. Grammons. We should probably hear from him. Go ahead.
Yeah, committee members, realistically, the only motion that would be necessary would be to change the heat source and decide to use natural gas. If you decide not to change, you've already made the motion at the council level to go with the electric. So any motion, if you want no motion, we stay with electric. If you want to make a motion to change back to recommend that you change that decision at the council to natural gas, that would be the motion to make. So if you can follow that, stay the course, no motion needed, change motion.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Grammons. Yeah, my reasoning for doing that was just to be super proper in terms of if we're going to have discussion or debate, we should probably, it should be around a motion, correct? Sure.
Or we just discuss the previous.
Yeah, sure, we can discuss the previous motion. Go for it, Ms. Osmus.
Okay, I don't think we discussed this, and I don't even know if it's possible, so don't laugh at me. But, okay, with the heating source that we were going to put in the city hall, we talked about we wouldn't transfer that to the new building, the new city hall. But if that building was demolished, would it be possible for that to go into the Rack 8 building? Let's say if we still stayed with electricity, and then we didn't sell it for 4 or 5 years. And then Rack 8, this is assuming that Rack 8 went out to the new city hall. Could that unit from the city hall go into the Rack 8 building at that point, or does it need all new ductwork and all new ventilation stuff? So that wouldn't be a feasible idea just for resale? That's my question.
Mr. Chair, if I may, you did kind of answer your own question. It would need the additional ductwork because electric does not need the ductwork where the gas does. So yes, you would have that additional cost to move that system over. You would save a bulk of the dollars if you wanted to convert it at that point, but there is going to be some, at that point, convert from electric to gas heat cost. What it would be, if it would be, you know, half again more, I'm not sure, but you would have to pay for it again to actually put the ductwork and move the boiler and system over there.
I wasn't sure that with the hot water heat, if that ductwork was in place.
It currently is, and the plan with the electrical would be to remove some of that because it's not needed for the electric.
Go ahead, City Administrator Grammons.
Committee members, and I think the one thing that you also want to consider is the size of the boiler for the City Hall building would be a totally, I'm going to take a wild guess at this, a totally different size for the Rack 8 building. If you follow that drift, is that you wouldn't want to put the City Hall boiler in the Rack 8 building. Your plumbers would say, no, you don't want to do that. You want to size your heat source to the building, and City Hall is huge compared to the Rack 8. So that by itself would say probably not.
Other questions or comments? See a lot of blank stares. Yeah, oh, that's good. There we go. There we go. Ms. Osmus.
Okay, so what is staff's recommendation at this point?
Members of the committee, the staff recommendation per the form is to solicit quotes for the natural gas.
I would
go ahead. Councilmember Fernando Alvarado.
Okay, so what I just heard is to pull the electric out and put in natural gas?
Not exactly. It's set up now for gas, but it's on steam instead. And so the ductwork, there is some ductwork there that can be used if we convert from steam heat to boiler heat. The only reason you would pull, well, the only thing you would pull out is you would pull out some of that facility to convert to electric.
I guess what I meant was, not in the literal terms, but we're backing off from the electric plan and going with the natural gas plan. That's what I meant when I said pulling out. That's what I meant, not literally. So,
yes, sir. Okay. The new information, that is a recommendation.
So do we have to have a motion to remove the switch from electric to the natural gas?
I would say that the motion would be that you would after reviewing the information on the cost payback between the two systems, that you would recommend that the city council then go with the natural gas system and not pursue the electric heating system. Kind of takes it all and rolls it into one.
Anybody wish to move on that?
Osmus, in light of the new information, I recommend that we go with the natural gas instead of electric as was previously decided.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion.
This is Audrey. I think to follow staff's recommendation is a good thing. So maybe if that's incorporated into the motion too, that based after the review, it was staff's recommendation to do this.
I would agree. Yeah, some verbiage alluding to this being staff's recommendation, also based off of new information and calculations and estimations. That way we are well grounded in our decision making. Further questions or comments before we vote? Okay, we have a motion and a second authorizing staff to solicit quotes for a natural gas heating source of the Rack 8 building after being presented new information by staff and also concurrent with staff's new recommendation. With the motion and a second, we'll go ahead and vote. Mr. Alvarado?
Aye.
Ms. Osmus?
Aye, and I'm okay with that addition to the motion.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do it like that, but. And Ms. Nelson?
Aye.
And Councilmember Plowman votes aye as well. It's 4 ayes, 0 nays. That motion passes. Next item up for discussion this evening is the relocation of a Magellan pipeline. Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one is a brand new item for you to consider. Magellan, as part of the Wilmer Y project, is required to lower a section of their pipeline. And I have a map included, and I've also been lucky enough to be granted permission to share my screen if you would like to me to talk while it's on a map. But this section of pipeline runs across a southwest corner of our future industrial park. The city has been given an opportunity to relocate a section of the pipeline while construction crews for Magellan are mobilized in the area. If the relocation is approved, the alignment will be adjacent to existing State Highway 40 right away. Relocating the pipeline will gain approximately 1 acre of buildable property in this southwest corner. And again, I've got a map attached if we need to reference that. In contrast, if the relocation is rejected, the pipeline will be lowered along the existing alignment across the southwest corner. But along with this construction, I'm being told Magellan will, instead of a blanket easement, will want a 100-foot right away on this pipeline, so that we'd not be able to put a structure in that easement, but we could still put parking lots, ponds, sidewalks, paths, whatever else in this particular corner of the lot. Financial impact, if the relocation is approved, BN will share in a portion of the mobilization and a couple other taxes, fees, shipping, things of that nature. If the relocation is rejected and the city chooses to relocate at a later date, when that happens, a new cost estimate would be granted or generated, and the city at that point, of course, would be responsible for 100% of the mobilization costs. Financial impact, and I hope everybody's sitting down for this one. If the relocation is approved, BN will, I already did that. So the financial impact, detailed cost estimates attached, and the city share of the proposed relocation is estimated at $1.5 million, and this is not budgeted. So all that being said, the staff recommendation would be to reject the relocation of the Magellan pipeline. They're, like I say, required already to lower the pipeline on the current alignment. And my feeling, staff's feeling, is not that, or that we will not lose that much buildable property in that southwest corner of a future industrial park lot. And I'll stand for any questions before or after your motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I just maybe a procedural question. Where did this come from? Who initiated this?
Well, it was, if I'm following your question, of course, it was initiated because of the railroad.
Right, but so, is it MnDOT or BNSF or Magellan approaching us right now?
Magellan approached us because they were going to be in the area.
Got it. Okay.
So I asked them for a cost estimate that was just city share.
Got it. Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering. Okay, Fernando, you had your hand up first. Go ahead.
So what would we get for $1.5 million or whatever that's going to be? Would that be just be that acre land?
Correct. According to, if you look at what's the last page of the of your packet, that map is in that corner. And so the yellow portion would be an easement that Magellan will have over their pipeline that we would not be able to build in. So that yellow portion is about 2 acres of property. The orange along the bottom is what would be half of an easement into the property where the Magellan line that would become unbuildable. So what we'd gain is that yellow portion. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. I see. Okay.
And so we'd gain 2 acres, we'd lose one, is where the 1 acre comes from.
Okay. But you did allude to the fact that if we need a retention pond or walking paths or something, we can still do that.
Absolutely. Parking lots, anything that's not a building can be built over the top of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Julie had raised her hand earlier, but then Audrey had her hand. Okay, we'll go to Audrey then. Go ahead.
Maybe just asking a question differently. Why did they think we would be willing to do this and pay $1.5 million?
It's an interesting question, and I was brought into the conversation late in the game. Apparently, Magellan talked to Eric at the airport, and they had the conversation. They said, well, if the city ever wants to move that, now would be a good time since we're there. And so that's when Eric got me in contact with them to start this ball rolling. Their push, Magellan's, now I'm talking, their push is, or their argument for us moving it or wanting to move it now is we would have to pay all the mobilization at a later date. they had this conversation with me prior to ever talking price. But when they started talking seven digits on the price, in my mind, it was pretty quickly to say that we were not gaining enough for $1.5 million.
Go ahead, Fernando.
Hey, help me out, Sean. What is around this piece of property currently? And would it accent any other property? Would anybody else, I'm thinking like Berg Manufacturing, they went across to the airport and you use the airport for storage. Is there anything around there that would justify that, that cost?
Personally, members of the committee, I don't think so. Let me do this. Let me share my screen and I'll zoom out farther on the GIS and that'll give you a better indication. Bear with me here 1 second while I get to the right screen called up. Can everybody see that? All right, can everybody see that okay? I can't see your faces, so hopefully you can. Somebody tell me if you can't see it.
I've got a good view.
All right.
We can see it, I can't make out any of what the writing is.
All right. Well, and if you can look at shapes and colors, I think that's our best bet at this point. So what you're looking at here at the bottom, let's say the bottom left of your screen is the intersection of County Road 55 and Highway 40, right in the middle of the existing Y project construction. Okay, so on the east edge of your page is County Road 5, and the bottom right corner is Genio. Okay, does this give you a little bit of of location?
Okay.
What looks like a runway in the middle of the screen is in fact just that, but it's the old airport. So it will be the future industrial park. Right here, if you can see my cursor.
Yeah.
Okay, right here you can see this scar in the what I call a scar, or looks like a shading in the picture or in the aerial. This is where the existing Magellan line currently lies. Okay, so this is their current scope of work, is to lower this section of line as it crosses the railroad. This right away right here, this is the new railroad right away. Okay, so what we would be losing if they put it in the same spot is the ability to build right on top of this line. We can still build in this triangle and we can still build in all of this area, but we cannot build right on top of the line. So what Magellan is proposing is that if we were to move this line along the right-of-way down along here, we would gain the ability to build right on that section of line. My point is there will never be a driveway here or here, because this is railroad and this is a bridge. The only access to this property will be back here at the closest. So my point is, when and if this ever gets platted as a industrial development, this will be the southwest corner of a lot, in which case they could have their storm retention right there, they could have a parking lot right there, because you cannot get road access to that spot anyway. So that was part of my reasoning for saying that we would probably reject this or propose to reject this proposal, if you will. Does that help a little bit?
Yes, I appreciate you taking the time to pull up the map and let us have an overview of the whole site. Again, I, you know, a thumbnail doesn't do it. So this is very good, and I think your logic is working with me. You know, with the railroad lines on the left there, and then the right of way, it doesn't make sense that it's gonna have a great deal of desire to build something that's gonna generate a lot of retail or anything like that. So I think I'm tracking with your thought process on this, Sean. Thank you.
Other comment, questions? Mr. Christensen, are you looking for a motion to reject it, or are you just recommending that we take no action and leave the original plan, the original plan?
You know, that's a good question. I did tell Magellan that I would get back with them one way or the other, because they're wanting to get in there this summer and do this work. So I think, and maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think no action by the council would be the same as a rejection. If either of those two things were to happen, I think that is the conversation I would have with Magellan.
Okay, City Administrator Grommets, I cannot see you, so now is your time to talk if you think differently or have advice.
No, I do not think differently, and I boil it down into its simplistic format is if that 1 acre of land was to be resold at $1.5 million, there's probably likely nobody's going to buy it. So your investment to save that far exceeds its actual value. So what we're doing is fine. And I think by not accepting their suggestion, as the city engineer pointed out, it can be used for all kinds of things. So it's not like it doesn't have value as it sits. It can be used for parking lot. It can be used for all kinds of things. So it still has value as an industrial lot.
Okay, this is good to know. Okay, so taking no action is the same as rejecting it. Having heard all of that, does anybody have other questions or wish to make any action? Seeing and hearing no further comment or actions, this item on the table will stay on the table and I suppose fall off at some point because other stuff will replace it. So I believe that concludes our action items. And then we move on to a discussion item regarding the Robbins Island flag system. And Rob is still here patiently waiting. Appreciate that, Rob. Go ahead and enlighten us regarding this this project.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up quick, if I can interrupt Rob. I assume you would still like this to be presented as such in the council packet for Monday, two Mondays from now.
Yeah, having the notes regarding the discussion is good. And then just the fact that we can, when covering the minutes, the fact that we let it lay for the aforementioned reasons. That would be good. Okay, Rob, you're on.
Good evening, everyone, chair, member of the committee. We talked about this several months ago about Robbins Island and the testing of the water and closing the beach down and the process that we use, you know, putting the signs out. It's kind of a little bit of a PR nightmare because it flashes all over and the Tribune gets onto it and then the Facebook and all that type of stuff. So when it came to the Park and Rec Board to discuss this a little bit, it came as their recommendation to still test the water. And so when it came to the council and discussed it a little bit more in depth, I felt like the discussion needs to take place about how can we soften the message of it. So did some research and looking at what other like beaches, like big beaches, like the Michigan sand dunes and all that, what they do for like their undertow, and kind of similar to what we do with our own pool, is if the weather's too cool or anything, that we do a flag system that basically it's a red or a green flag that we put up. And we can do that out at Robbins Island. We could put the signage up there, put a flagpole system, and use the same type of flag system that we have at the pool of a red, saying that it's, you know, not safe to go into the water, or green, that it's safe to go in. I talked to Public Works about the flagpole. They have one down at Public Works that we could use. We also have donation dollars that we can use to for water safety from Blue Cross Blue Shield that we can use to enhance the area a little bit by, you know, if we want to put some rock, I'm losing the word for it, the stone that you can pile up, and then, you know, put the sign in there, and it has the documentation on it about why we do what we do with the Robbins Island. I did talk to Sarah at the wastewater treatment. She thought this was a good idea too. Talked to Gary Manzer. They're all in on it. So just kind of seeing, is this the right type of format that we would want to go with, is more of a flag type of system. A lot of the work can be done in-house, or we can go and look at if a contractor wants to come and do it. The location that I feel like it could be at is over by where the bikes are at. It's kind of off the beach area, but yet it'd still be visible for people to see when they're walking, and the flagpole would be right there. As far as a PR move, we could just basically take the picture of a flag and then post that onto, you know, our social media, and everyone would just understand that, you know, a red flag means no and a green flag means yes. And I think it would really soften the message instead of plastering the signs all over the beach saying that it's closed.
Rob, Bob. Question, would the flag be indicative of the beach actually being closed, or would it be a recommendation against swimming?
Well, it's the fecal count that if it gets over 200, it's the recommendation to close. If you really want to say it's closing the water down, the beach is still available. So people can still go out onto the beach. So it's some terminology is that it's the water, you know, quality is why we are closing that area down. So I think that documentation would be great to have on that sign saying that you could still utilize the beach area. It's just that we highly recommend not to go into the water because of the fecal count is so high.
Well, the concept is not new, because I believe there are thousands of miles of ocean shoreline with public beaches that also use flags denoting danger from either riptides or Portuguese man-o-war, or maybe not geese, but the flag thing works. What are the thoughts of the committee on this idea? Go ahead, Julie.
I'm along with you kind of on that question of, are we using the terminology that the water is closed, or I kind of like the softer approach of it's recommended not to enter the water. Because to me, if you get into saying that it's closed, then it's like somebody's going to call in that somebody's in the water. I like the softer terminology of, or verbiage of, that it's at their own risk.
I think what we could do is get the terminology from Sarah, because she's got all the technical terms on it, and then have Robert Scott look at how it's to be worded correctly, so we could say that it's a recommendation, and so the liability then doesn't fall on us.
Go ahead, Audrey.
I'm familiar with what you use at the pool, but it does signify open or closed. And so, you know, if we're saying that the water is not safe to go into because of the testing, then I don't know that it hurts to say that, you know, don't go swimming. I don't know how you want to say it, but that the concern I would have is that, yeah, the timing of the testing, et cetera, was the problem last year, not the testing. But the reality is that if there's lots of people there and it tests, the test is bad, no different than your own pools kind of thing or whatever, you shouldn't go in. And so the open or closed to me is still what it means at the pool. And I would think that's what it would mean at the beach.
I guess the area that I get hung up just a little bit is more of an area of principle because, yeah, I believe that the city, it's incumbent on the city to make a an informed decision and an informed recommendation, I believe, liability-wise. And Mr. Grammons, you can jump in here and give your opinion. I think liability-wise, we're probably covered if we're doing the testing and then we make the our recommendation based on what that testing shows. But I don't know that we can legally like call the police and have them haul somebody out of the water, out of a lake, because I mean, I don't think it's illegal to be in the lake, right? Or am I not right?
Yeah, I think you're right. The let's say the difference between the swimming beach and the playground equipment right at this point in time is that we've actually got a local emergency called and also a peacetime state emergency dealing with an issue of the virus. But in a normal day-to-day operation, in essence, when you close the pool down, you lock the door. You don't let people lay around the pool and suntan, and they can do that in their backyard kind of a thing. Where here you actually could, you could actually be there suntanning or playing in the sand. Even that would be questionable because the contaminants would still be in the sand. But I don't think we'd be sending people to drag them out of the water. So in that situation, it really is a recommendation that they stay out because of the high fecal count.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Yeah, I mean, that's what I want to make sure is that if we're doing our testing and we're posting our numbers, and I believe that's all a very responsible thing to do for the safety of our citizens. But then once we make that recommendation and use a system like Rob is suggesting here to notify the public of the risks associated at that particular time. Beyond that, I don't know that you can physically stop somebody from being in a body of water if it's a natural body of water, but that's just my personal feel. Go ahead, Audrey.
It's just reminding me, and this has been talked about so much. There's so many proactive things we could be doing to get those geese out of there, whether it's a fountain or something that would help us not to have some of these problems. So, the sign is the sign in my mind. It's either open or closed. But I do think that maybe there's some other things we should be looking at doing that would help us not to have this problem all the time. And I know it's rainwater, I know that, but there are things that were looked at, whether it was vegetation or just doing something to keep the water moving so the geese weren't there. And so I would hope that we are looking at doing something proactive with that. In addition to, I'm great with the flag system, that's fine. But I would hope that we'd be proactive to improve the water too and improve the beach conditions. So I don't know if that's a request or just a suggestion or whatever, but I'm fine with the signs.
I think it'll be interesting too, and Sean can comment on this, but they did do a lot of work along the perimeter edge of where a lot of the geese were congregating. And I can't remember, was that last year, maybe 2 years ago, but I feel like the numbers of geese are way down compared to what they were. And I have a hard time believing that won't have an impact. Now, as we go on forward, maybe we haven't seen it yet, but I think the goose numbers, because I drive that route running kids every day, and it seems like the geese population's way down. Sean, what are your thoughts regarding that?
So,
yeah, you know, the public works crews do a little bit of work every year, especially there along that side. This year we did quite a bit. We cleaned that up. We put the new dock out there. And so I think there's going to be some more activity, which will also help reduce the geese numbers. We've done some additional deterrent methods. Some work great for a little while, and then the geese get smart to it. And so we got to change things up a little bit. So it's we're continually working with that. And Rob and I and Public Works and Wastewater are kind of all together with ideas and thoughts and you know, some silly and some legit. So we're working on it.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Go ahead, Administrator Grimes.
Yeah, community members, the only thing that I would add is, you know, when we inform, you know, our citizens of the potential risk that they have, you know, let's say it's not closed, it's recommended you not go into it, into the water. The question popped up into my head is, well, how bad is it? You know, is it 210 count over 200, where 200 is acceptable in or under? I mean, that, you know, that's marginal. But if it's 2000 over 200, you know, then that seems pretty nasty. Okay. And the more simpler you have it, red flag, green flag, or sign, you know, beach closed, lake open, I don't think give, you know, the citizen the amount of information necessary to make an informed decision. Is it reasonable? Is it really bad? You know, and so that's only, you know, I mean, we can use the radio, and but that makes, you know, that makes a big hullabaloo too. You know, we're telling, hey, it's, you know, anybody that goes out there, if they saw a sign out there that said recommended fecal coliform be, you know, under 200, I can't remember the numbers anymore, so I'm just picking a number, under 200, and it's at 2500. Now, as a resident, I can look at that and go like, nah, I'm not putting my kids in there. If it was 210 over, you know, instead of 200, that's close enough. So, you know, the more information we have, it can be simple, but information is power, and a citizenry that knows what's going on, you know, is always better off. So simple is good, but I think they still need information.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, just a question along that lines before I lose my train of thought. Based on the testing that we've done and the numbers that we've had for years, because we've been doing this for years, Rob or Sean or whatever, would it be fair to say that a majority of the time it's either we're good or we're not good, but in the instances that we're not good, it's not like crazy off the charts, it's like a marginal thing? So like in the event that it was crazy off the charts, maybe that would be the time that we would actually take a more extraordinary measure, like take bit off and say it's closed because something, you know, that's more than just a marginal. Because I think from what I remember seeing is that, you know, those counts can be high, but they don't, it's based on a scale system or a barometric system, so to speak, and it doesn't always come back like off the charts, like to the point where you or I wouldn't want to go anywhere near it because of fear of death. Or am I wrong on that? Go ahead, Rob.
There's been some times where those numbers have been very, very high, and it takes 2 or 3 days for it to kind of settle down, and then they retest it. Once it gets over 200, they retest it a lot to make sure where it's back down, and then they send us the email saying that it's under 200 and we can reopen. It really gets more into the later part of the summers, especially when it gets really hot and humid and it gets very stagnant. So again, to Audrey's comment about, you know, the circulation and all that type of stuff of the water, then that's where it doesn't get so stagnant. But when we get huge amounts of rain, that's when the counts go up, and they go up fast, but they go down fast as well.
Well, that's good information to have. I guess I was under a false impression then. I thought that the times that we were not passing, or the times that it was high, I thought it was only marginally high. I didn't know that it skyrocketed like that. So I stand corrected. Fernando, you had your hand up.
Yes, I did. Thank you. Now, I like the simplicity of the red and green. That makes sense to me. But I also like what City Administrator Grandma said. With testing being done, who gets that information? I would expect that the city administrator, he's the guy that's going to get the call, or Rob would get the call as to why is the beach closed today. I think a lot of people would, a lot of locals would probably know. But maybe those that are from out of town might want to make the call and say, hey, why is this closed? But if they see the flag, I think they're going to know what's going on, especially if you're local and that you've been in the area for any length of time. I like that idea, and I like the idea of sharing the information gathered from the testing that goes on a regular basis. So that's what I would go with.
Thanks, Fernando. Other comment? Go ahead, Rob.
Just so you guys understand the process, when the testing gets done, the test results come to me first, and then I send it out to all the public works people, from Sean to Gary to Paul, get Brian involved, Dave Hillebrand. So I got it on my computer. I just get the message and say the count is over 200. And then we all know the procedures about how to get the information out. So that would be the other thing too, is understanding, do we put the charts online so people can view it as well, you know, all of our test results? Would that be something that we would want to start to do?
Go ahead, Julie.
I say no. I think the simpler the better. The green, the red, they make the choice, and I can appreciate more knowledge is power, and it helps you make a better decision. But just for that very reason, that those scores can spike, they go down just as quickly. And who know? I just don't know when people are going to check it again. I just think if it's green, it's green. If it's red, it's red. And in the explanation on that placard next to what the different colors mean, it's going to state that the reason why the beach is closed is because the fecal count is above this particular amount, and the caution that they would enter at their own risk. And I'm sure we'll see what it is that the city attorney comes back with, but I'm guessing the verbiage is going to be close to that. I just don't think we want to get into putting what the number is, just because I just don't.
Okay. Well noted. Thanks, Julie. I remember the last time that we had this conversation, and a couple comments stuck out, and that was, I believe, from Vicki Davis, but then also from our city administrator. We can, as a part of the public notification and the whole PR, because we acknowledge that was really the thing. There's rumors that circulate around the community when we shut down and then all these different things, and it's happened for years and years and years. But one of the things that was talked about is if we can we present the information, but we can present the information in a more friendly manner. Like even if as a part of that signage, we have the silhouette of geese on there, or, you know, some, you know, tongue in cheek saying or something like that, that kind of makes it a little bit more lighthearted. That can also deliver the message that, look, this is, you know, it's not this issue that is always going around in the rumor mill, circulating the rumor mill or the Facebooks, but it's actually this. And it just casts more of a lighthearted connotation with the message, and that will keep people from honing in on the topic year after year after year. Thoughts on that, Administrator Grommets?
No, I would agree. I think we had some thoughts last year that we could put up there to inform, you know, the people that use the beach and the citizens what is going on and why it's going on. We can have some fun with it. I know Kelsey's going to want to, you know, put her brain to this, and she'll have all kinds of ideas that she can come up with. It'll work.
All right, it's on you, Kelsey, then. The whatever the main slogan is got to be yours. But then you got to live with it. Rob, is that the kind of direction that you want? I get the feeling that that the committee and somebody jump, feel free to jump in, but the committee likes the idea of the simplicity. The flag system is good. The red, green simplicity of that is good. It's informative. And the direction of the informational sign or whatever to be posted, I assume you'll put that together and you'll bring it back for a formalized approval.
Yes, that's, I just want to make sure that we're going down the right path about what we wanted to do here. It's simple. It's going to, I mean, we got some dollars donated, so I think it's going to be, you know, very feasible for us to do it. And again, I think the whole thing was too, is to soften the message instead of having signs posted out all over the sand. I think this, it's a win-win.
Yeah, and it seems like the committee's in agreement about that. And like, we also agree that whatever slogan's on there should be Kelsey's and then should have her name underneath it. That would be great. Fernando.
I'll put her phone number too.
Yes, excellent.
Yeah. It being a flag system, again, I'm very excited about that. I just want to make sure it's easily seen from the road, from the entry of the park. So if somebody sees a flag and they don't want to come to the park, they can just keep on going their merry way and or whatever. So again, just clarify which end is it going to be, towards the highway or towards the let's say the destination playground. Where's the location of the flag?
To the highway. If you know where the bike rack is at, for the bike share program, because then it'd be kind of a dual purpose that people can see it while they're putting their bikes away or getting a bike, that it would be doable right there. It'd be right off the side of the beach. And I'll get an overhead of what, where it's located at, so you guys can see it, to see if it's something that we want to adjust it to this side or that side. And everything, so we can get that. Just want to make sure that we're going down the right path.
And visibility on a flag is the ideal thing, but I like the process. I like what you're presenting. I think it's going to be easily understood. And if the numbers have to be known, you will know the numbers. Brian, city administrator, will know to get a hold of you or somebody. It won't be a mystery as to what the numbers are on any given day. And I think that's important also in the event that we need to put that information out. So thank you.
Okay, sounds like we're all on the same page on that one, Rob. You should be good to go ahead and keep running with that idea. We'll look forward to seeing it back here with the location and with the other detailed information that needs to go along with that, and then we will make our decision. According to my agenda, that ends our items for this evening. Is there anything else that anybody would like to discuss? Go ahead, Fernando.
I was just wondering how the reclamation of the airport runway that the contractor was going to do tear up, has that been done? Has he removed that one taxi lane or whatever you want to call it to fulfill he was going to use? Has that been done?
Members of the committee, that has not been done yet, but it has. It has now made it to their 2 and 3 week look ahead on the weekly meetings, weekly progress meetings that we've had for that project. And I could actually get a better date for you tomorrow if you're interested in it, but because they're having their weekly meeting again tomorrow. But it was on their agenda. I can't remember if it was supposed to be this week or next. But last I looked, the taxiway was still there, but the crusher was coming to town soon. I'll tell you that.
Okay, that sounds good. And I got one more. Our eastern flood mitigation away from the pond, How's that moving forward? Are we seeing good progress there?
Yeah, that's the next phase of the, I think that's what you're talking about, the next phase of the southeast or the, yeah, east side drainage, I think is what we've called it now. That next phase has not been bid yet, but the plans and specs are nearing completion and we will put that together shortly. Again, that's a sales tax project. And so at this point, it has not been one that has been put on pause by the council, but that's kind of what we were waiting for, that answer first. And not hearing that one being on the list to pause, we'll probably go forward with that relatively quickly so we can get that put together.
Okay, yeah, we'd like to get that one done. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff before we move on? Or doesn't have to be a question, can be an item that we'd like for a future meeting. Next meeting should be June 3rd. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, with that, thanks everybody for being here tonight. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'm moved.
We got a motion to adjourn. We are adjourned. Thanks and have a good night, everyone.